Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John's engineering and producing the show, and together we have a big welcome for you to the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday. It's April 20th, 2021. We're now in our 11th year here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our radio station is 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening, which means you can hear the program anywhere in the world if you're around a computer by going to buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line and talk to a rising star. In fact, she was named one of the 20 rising stars in Tucson. Biz Tucson put out their next generation leaders, and Casey Hill, the CEO of Greater Tucson Leadership, is one of them. Casey, in 2020, was recipient of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber's 40 Under 40 Awards. Casey, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you doing today?
Doing real well. Thank you for asking. Tell our listeners a bit about the Greater Tucson Leadership. This is not exactly a new organization. It's been around for over 40 years, but you've got some new things happening. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, you know, Greater Tucson Leadership, we've been around. We were established in 1980, and we offer community leadership programs. We have right now, we're accepting applications for our flagship program. It's our core program called Lead Tucson. And it's a 10-month-long program, and we accept a cohort of 40 individuals from the community to participate in the process of doing a deep dive into our community, understanding the systems that shape our community. So our participants, they meet one day per month, and they learn about a different topic. So our topics include government, economic development, education. We have criminal justice and border. So there's a 10-month-long process where they're really understanding the challenges that our community faces in each of these areas, as well as opportunities to get involved and make a difference and create positive change. And, you know, our alumni of our programs are going on to serve in public office and volunteer on boards for nonprofits and create community initiatives to tackle some of these large-scale issues that we see in Southern Arizona.
Is it a virtual session? Will it start off as virtual? Hopefully, we'll be face-to-face during the year.
Yeah, so the program starts in September. We're hoping by then we can move back to in-person. That's the current plan, which, of course, as we've seen the last year, those plans could change depending on, you know, how the pandemic plays out. We moved to a virtual format this past year. So we're wrapping up our current class. They graduate in June, and we've been virtual pretty much this entire year. But our goal is to meet in person again, because the experience they have in being able to meet in person and build those connections and that network. You know, our class participants are from, you know, all sectors of the community, corporate, you know, they come from Raytheon, Caterpillar, Tucson Electric Power, to nonprofit, small business owners, University of Arizona. So we want them to be able to meet in person, hopefully in the future, so they can network and build those relationships. But it's much harder to do in a virtual format.
So for applicants, is there what are some of the requirements? Is there like an age limit, or how does it work?
There is no age limit. Our program is open to adults of all ages. We have, that's one of the great things about our program, is the diversity of the participants. We have class members who are in their 20s, maybe it's their first job out of college, and they're just trying to gain some leadership skills, to individuals who are maybe nearing retirement and are going to have a little more time on their hands and freedom to get more plugged into the community. So there's no age requirement. There's definitely a perception that we're a program for young professionals, and that's not true. We have participants from all age groups and backgrounds. And really our only requirement is that you're willing to get involved after you graduate and really make a positive difference here in Southern Arizona.
And all sectors you mentioned were included. Is there a cost, and how does the application process work? Is there this is done electronically, I assume?
Yeah, our applications are online. You can fill them out. It's a pretty easy application form. Tuition is $2,000, but we also offer scholarships for people who work in the nonprofit sector, small business owners, those who may be unemployed and looking for the next opportunity. So we do have a scholarship application that you can find on the application on the website. And then we do an interview process, and we'll notify applicants by the end of May if they've been selected for the program.
You changed the name of this program to LEAD Tucson, correct?
Yeah, we did. So we decided to do that this year because, you know, since 1980, we had existed as one program. But we've seen tremendous growth in the last 16 months. And last year in 2020, we launched a second program to help educate people on how to run for office and get an initiative on the ballot and to volunteer on a campaign, work on a campaign. We're a nonpartisan organization. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. And really our focus is educating people on just how to be more civically engaged. And what we realized is we really needed to create an identity for each of these programs. So Greater Tucson Leadership is the organization, but we wanted each of our programs to have its own identity. And we're actually in the process of creating and developing another program that we're hoping to launch in 2022. So as we're growing and developing, we're looking at, you know, how we brand ourselves in our programs.
As a young professional, and you were named, as I mentioned in the opening remarks, as one of the really up-and-coming leaders, what do you think about the potential for this area, and what are some of the problems that you see?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, I think Tucson is really an up-and-coming community. We're getting a lot of recognition, and there's a lot of potential here. I think one of the things we focused on, you know, in our program is just helping our class participants understand, you know, the importance of having a diverse economy, for example. I think what I would like to see happen more in Tucson is more collaboration across sectors, public and private partnerships established to help kind of address these large-scale issues. I think if we have the public sector and private sector working together, I think we can accomplish more, and it creates opportunities for more innovative solutions. So that's really what I'd like to see happen, and one of the things we champion, you know, in our program as well, is just that cross-collaboration.
You came from another area, I believe, from the Southeast. What attracted you to Tucson?
So I came to visit at Christmas, which is the best place. That's
yes.
The best time of the year to visit Tucson. My husband's parents live here. His mom grew up here. And we came at Christmas and just fell in love with the community. We came here a couple of years in a row, and I love the desert. And I just really love the sense of community that you find here in a large city. I grew up in small towns in rural Kentucky, and I was a little intimidated, you know, moving. I've never lived in a city so big before. And what I love is just how passionate people are here, and that sense of community connectedness they have. And it's so easy to get plugged in here if you make the effort. And that's one of the things I love most about Tucson.
All right. Where can people find out more and apply for the new class, which is called LEAD Tucson? Where can our listeners find out more if they're interested?
Yeah. So you go to greatertucsonleadership.org.
Okay. And that will get you to the application.
That'll get you to the application, and also my contact information is on the website, so you can reach out to me or our program manager, Justin Lukasiewicz, for any questions about the application process.
All right. Casey Hill, CEO, Greater Tucson Leadership. Nice meeting you. Thank you very much, Casey.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. The favorite bakery for the Buckmaster Show is Mona's Danish Bakery. We send so many of our listeners up there. Find out what all the excitement is about. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They opened the doors at 6:30 this morning for breakfast. The breakfasts are outstanding. So are the lunches. Great sandwiches. But of course, where they really shine is the Danish Kringle. And what I also like is kind of the relative of the Kringle, and that's the Danish coffee cake. So also check that out. Both are light and tasty, multi-layered pastries with a variety of fillings. John, on the other side of the glass, is finding it's time to, he's got a mouth-watering thing going on right now. I don't blame him. I get hungry just talking about it. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. You can certainly call ahead for your bakery goods, or just stop in, and we haven't talked lately about their breads. Oh, my goodness. A wide variety of European-style breads. They'd be great right now on a sandwich, so check it out. And by the way, the Help Wanted sign is now out at Mona's, so be a great place to work. We'll be right back with Shelley Fishman, who is here with me in studio and just gave me a thumbs down. Well, what do you expect? Tuesday, during our Moneymaker Report, it sometimes goes that way. We'll be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen.
Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Of course, Shelley, it's my wish on our Tuesday Moneymaker Report that every Tuesday you would be giving me a thumbs up, but it's just not the case. It's not the way of the world.
It's not the way, Bill. It's just not
today. We're having a little bit of a down day. Hey, you know, this is a word that we have used over the last 12 months so much. Uncertainty.
Yeah, and uncertainty seems to be... let's just say there's a plethora of uncertainty.
Yeah, waiting for the verdict today. You know.
So the verdict in the Chauvin case is important, not because it's important to the markets, but because it might create violence and uncertainty on the streets. And in a case like that, you don't know what to expect as a business person or as an investor. So that's kind of underlying some things. We've also seen uncertainty in businesses' approach to some of the politics going on in a majority of the states right now in terms of changing the election law. And so we saw, in fact, I think it was just yesterday, they were talking about boycotting, I believe it was Home Depot. So some large, community present American corporations are facing the uncertainty of having to deal with the politics around, the emotions running high in the community. So that we're seeing that the pandemic, the COVID variants are coming back, and we're seeing in unexpected places. Some spikes in cases and hospitalizations, and especially among people who are younger. And so all of that, makes investors think, well, let me take some profits right now and sit on the sidelines and just watch for a while.
It's one of those uncertain days that just seem to pop up, don't they?
You can't really predict them except, let's not be greedy.
Right.
Oh, come on, let's be greedy. Greed is good.
So you're saying underlying all of this is... The market has been at historic highs.
Exactly. On Friday, the market closed.
Maybe this would be a good time to take a little profit, take some profit sharing, right?
Absolutely. These are when the market is as overbought as it is, and I believe it's a lot overbought. Then at some point, the natural thing is to pull back. To pull some profits off, especially if you have what we have in this market, which is it's not going uniformly up or uniformly down. We have certain sectors doing better at times than other sectors are doing, which gives investors who play the market a lot, it gives them the ability to take some losses here and take some gains elsewhere and offset short-term gains with short-term losses, so that it minimizes their tax exposure when they do these trades. So when you have the market moving up unevenly,
which it has. I mean, it's been very common for the S&P to be up one day, the Dow and NASDAQ to be down, or NASDAQ to be up, and on it goes.
Right, but I'm talking not only between the main indices. But within those indices, you have different corporate sectors, economic sectors. Mm-hmm. So when you have, for instance, a boom in travel and lodging, mm-hmm. as we had over the past couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden that pulls back. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have the banking sector doing very well at one point and then not doing so well. Or manufacturing doing well and not doing so well. So what you see is people picking and choosing their ability to invest here, take profits, take losses, offset the two, and then get their portfolios kind of ready for the next, what they believe is going to be the next wave of
right.
increases and yeah. losses. So, I mean, people do that for a living. And, you know, some people make a great deal of money doing that. Most people don't. But most people don't do that as their main source of income.
You mentioned the travel industry. Over the weekend, I was calling American Airlines about a credit from the COVID year that I had, and there was a four-hour wait. And people were saying, well, why would there be a wait? Why do you need to talk to someone? Why can't you do it on the internet?
Because everybody's got credits.
Thank you. And you cannot deal, at least in most cases, with the COVID credits by logging in right. and just doing that. You need to talk to a live human being. And there was a four-hour wait. Luckily, American, I think some of the other airlines have it too, say that we will call you back when it's your turn. So you go out and have your day and then come back at, you know, 3 or 4 hours later.
And these long wait times
yes.
are made worse by the fact that people are not working in the environments that they're used to working in.
Yes.
And so a lot of the service employees, mm-hmm. They're working from home.
They are.
So it's harder for call center managers
yes.
to manage what's going on and forecast how much time they need. We need to get back to, I just want to get back to normal.
I know.
So we can go down to 1 hour waits and you know, sit on the phone fuming.
Yeah, but you make a good point because these people are working at home that when you finally get someone on the phone, and then if there is any kind of an issue that they need to talk to their supervisor about, that supervisor usually would be in the call center. They'd raise their hand or whatever, and the supervisor would come around. Now they're working remotely, so they're going to have to contact the supervisor remotely.
Right. So, you know, Bill, a lot of these changes are going to remain in the system for a very long time.
Yep.
Because people don't want to get into, you know, a situation where they're in a barn full of people.
Yes.
So we're going to have to figure this out. The technology can certainly handle it.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're not quite there yet. And as a result, you know, the first thing you hear when you get into one of these queues is call activity is running unusually high.
Yeah.
And that's become kind of the standard introduction you hear.
Yeah, that's what you hear.
So when you get a sector like the travel sector that suddenly
is booming, yeah.
then it's very difficult for them to get the people up and running and trained and competent.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get issues with managing those people and managing their efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just hear so many horror stories. You know, one sector that's been really very busy has been, you know, the large retail sector where it's online retail.
Yes.
And you hear these awful stories about, you know, people in these warehouses not allowed to have cell phones on, mm-hmm. on the floor with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, being monitored when they mm-hmm. go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Just these, even though they seem to be pretty well paid, mm-hmm. the working conditions seem to be unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put on top of that the fact that that sector happens to be booming like never before.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of these people are trainees, essentially.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting time.
It is, and I'm glad we're going there this session, Shelley, because this is a new way of doing business that is not going to go away overnight.
It's not going to go away. In fact,
I may come back with a hybrid kind of a system.
Right. I read an article, I think, just last week, it might have been even yesterday, where they're talking about the factory job of the future
yes.
is in a warehouse.
Wow.
you know, you take a look at the hundreds of thousands of people that Amazon has put on its payroll in just the past year.
Right.
You know, these corporations are now the largest employers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a new thing. And learning how to manage the people correctly, how to do it in a you know, humane way, how to provide the benefits that need to be had, creating loyalty, creating upward mobility within these corporations so that people want to stick around.
Yeah.
All of these are challenges that corporations need to be facing right mm-hmm. now. And those, you know, when I see the word challenge, I underline it twice and write the word uncertainty under it.
Yes.
Because you don't
yes.
know
no.
What your infrastructure, and infrastructure, you know, employees mm-hmm. are part of the infrastructure.
Yeah.
You don't know what their loyalty is going to be. You don't know how much money to invest in them because you don't know what the turnover is going to be. And these are things that corporations are needing to learn from scratch.
Great topic, workforce of the future. And as you point out, these people are in a giant kind of warehouse. They're not making anything. It's not a manufacturing facility. They are picking up goods to be delivered that are already made.
That's right.
To be delivered.
And yet that work needs to be done, and it
yes.
needs to be done in large quantities.
Yep, yep. Social justice and all these things are going to be all part of the equation.
Absolutely.
All right, Shelley, always a pleasure. Hope the rest of your week is good. And we'll
hope the Dow and the markets do better tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll see
how it goes tomorrow. It's not Tuesday tomorrow, so
yeah,
they will.
There you go. Have a great rest of the week, Shelley. Thank you very much.
Happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are monitoring the news out of Minneapolis on the Chauvin trial. A verdict is in. We don't know what the verdict is, but the jurors are returning to the courthouse. So if we get something during my show for sure here in the next 25 minutes, we'll bring that news to you. It's kind of ironic. We're going to be talking about history for the remainder of the program because today's decision in the Chauvin trial will be very historic and history in the making. Before we talk about Arizona history, I want to tell everybody about a place that has its own history and a good history at that. 51 years they've been providing beautiful things to people in Southern Arizona. Talking about Green Things, 51st year now, an extraordinary collection of Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, lighting, home accessories, and beautiful gifts. That's Zocalo Village, which is part of Green Things. And then, of course, the Zocalo Village is within the 13-acre compound of Green Things, and there you will find amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more. They're open daily, and like you, I'm very much interested in some beautiful things for the garden, so I would go to Green Things, and I do go to Green Things, and I ask their very knowledgeable staff, how about something very pretty that's going to survive spring and at least up until the monsoon. And boy, we need rain desperately, don't we? We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Heidi Osselier received her undergraduate degree in history at the University of California, Berkeley. She earned a doctorate in U.S. history at ASU. She has taught women's history, Southwest history, Arizona history, and U.S. survey courses at ASU and Scottsdale Community College and Phoenix College as well. Professor Osselier has served on the executive board and the scholars committee for the Arizona Women's Heritage Trail, as well as the editorial board for the Journal of Arizona History. She's been a speaker for Arizona Humanities Council and numerous other organizations, and she currently serves on the board of the Arizona History Convention, which will be our topic for the next 20 minutes or so. She is the author of two very acclaimed books. Her first book, published by University of Arizona Press, is titled Winning Their Place, Arizona Women in Politics, 1883 to 1950. And her second book, and we interviewed her here on the program a couple of years ago about this book, is titled Arizona's Deadliest Gunfight, Draft Resistance and Tragedy at the Power Cabin in 1980. That book was published in 2018 by the University of Oklahoma Press. Professor Osselier, how are you?
Great. Thank you, Bill. And thank you for having me back on again.
Well, it's a pleasure to once again talk with you. Both those books, by the way, have done well, and they're still available, correct?
Yes, they are. You can go on Amazon or, you know, the university press sites and get them. Absolutely.
Let's talk about this year's Arizona History Convention. Through the years, this has been a very popular event, and this year, you're making history because it's going to be a virtual conference. Tell us about it.
Well, that's exactly right. We always have the traditional, you know, at the hotel or historical society meeting where the scholars and amateur historians and professionals come together. and couldn't do it this last year at all. I had to cancel like everybody else did, and we decided to do it online this year as a virtual convention. It's, you know, we're very dependent on our IT staff, and we have some wonderful volunteers, including some from the U of A, and we're hoping it all comes together. I think we have all the kinks worked out, you know, cross your fingers and all that. But it starts this Thursday, April 22nd at 2:30 in the afternoon, and it runs through Saturday on the 24th. One of the benefits of having an online conference is you can attend it anytime you want, and you can even wear your jammies in your living room if you want to. All the sessions will be recorded, and they'll be available for 30 days after the conference. So if you're registered, you can listen to them at your leisure whenever you like. And because we are online this year, the cost is greatly reduced. It's only going to be $30 to attend 3 days worth of sessions. And there are discounts available both for registered students and members of the Arizona Historical Society. So if you're interested, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the highlights of this year's conference, and there are a lot of them.
There really are.
But you can go and check it out at arizonahistory.org.
And we'll give that information again throughout our interview. But you've been very busy. You were working as the historical consultant and producer on a couple of documentary films and podcasts, including two that are being released this year. One of them is titled Route 66, Women. That's a three-part series for PBS by Katrina Park. She's the producer and director, and you also teamed up with Katrina on Frontline Women, a two-part miniseries podcast. And let's talk about Katrina. She's going to be involved in one of these sessions. I believe it's titled Desert Visionaries, Arizona History in the Popular Imagination.
Right, and that one is going to be held on Friday night at 6 o'clock. The Desert Visionary brings together several podcasters and documentary filmmakers to show their vision of where Arizona history is going in this medium. You know, are we going to the traditional gunfights, or are we going to more contemporary topics? And that's obviously where Katrina's gone. I've worked with her on Route 66 Women, the untold story of the Mother Road, and it's going to be coming out next year. She is working with distributors right now. Sometimes she was very fortunate before COVID hit to have most of the production work done, but she still has post-production and distribution to do. It looks like it's bound for PBS, and it's going to be three parts, and it's going to go through the whole length of Route 66. And she's really writing history, which is unusual for a documentarian. She's done with her team of historians. We've been going through archives and finding people to interview, and she's writing the first pages of this historical story, because you just don't have a lot about women in history. The second one, and I believe you have a clip of it, she's distributing through one of the other presenters on the panel, Black Barrel Media, and they're podcasters. And we did this entirely during COVID. And it's because it's a podcast, it's audio, and like your medium, Bill, mm-hmm. you can do this without being face to face. But it was still very challenging because it focuses right on Arizona women during World War II and all the ways they responded to the war. And we couldn't get into a lot of the federal archives and state archives. They've been closed. So we had to, you know, kind of work our way around it, but we got some tremendous stories. We looked at women who were in the WACs or in the nursing corps, and who actually shipped out and were serving overseas on the front lines during World War II, either in the South Pacific or Europe. And also some of the discrimination, especially for Black nurses when they were stationed at Fort Huachuca during the war. And also looked at Native American women who were training at Sage Memorial Hospital up on the Navajo Reservation at Ganado before shipping out during the war.
Before we take the break, I want to return to Route 66 women. Route 66 has always been kind of dear to me. I come from the Chicago area and have traveled it when I came out to the University of Arizona back in the mid-60s. So I remember the old Route 66. What role did women play? Give us a little bit of a feel for the Route 66 women, the untold story.
Well, you know that story, you get your kicks on Route 66?
Yes, yep.
Bobby Troop, guess who kind of came up with that clicking of the fingers and the title? His wife, as they were driving along Route 66 after the war.
Wow.
And there's a great interview in the film with his daughter, with the daughter and granddaughter talking about their stories. You know, have you ever seen those iconic photographs by Dorothea Lange,
right,
of families going during the Depression, what we used to call the Okies, you know, going west? Dorothea Lange is a story of Route 66. You might know of Marshall Trimble, our state historian.
Sure.
He's in the film, and he's talking about his mother, who had to go work in a diner along Route 66 up in Ash Fork. That's where he grew up. And telling stories about those times. We went and spent a lot of time in Delgadillo's store in Seligman, Arizona, which is sort of the birthplace of historic Route 66. And so we interviewed a lot of the daughters that are running the store now. And it's just an iconic place. Tourists from all over the world go there. Have you ever been up there to Delgadillo's?
I have.
The barbershop?
I have.
I think he has a 90-something birthday. He's still with us, and he started the historic Route 66 Association.
A long time ago, we did the Seligman over to Oatman and that area where there was still some original pavement of Route 66. It was a great trip.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We interviewed the women that are running the store, and they have wonderful stories of Route 66. So these are things that you're just not going to usually get. And she also interviewed a lot of business owners that were part on the Green Book, because a lot of public places were segregated and African Americans could not go into white restaurants. And there's some great segments on that. This is a three-hour series. So, you know, it's just fascinating stories that you just haven't heard before.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. We'll have more with Dr. Professor O'Salier talking about the Arizona History Convention. I got a little story I want to tell about New Mexico and Route 66 with Heidi. It isn't Arizona, but it's still about Route 66. I'll tell you that after we take a break.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan.
The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. New Mexico is once again open to out-of-state visitors, and we're so glad. One of our great sponsors, the fine people in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, they are ready with open arms. Take that 3-hour drive to Silver City from Tucson, and you will find there's a lot to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Good starting point is their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. Check it out and get rolling for a trip over to New Mexico. Dr. Heidi Osler is with us, and Heidi is involved with the upcoming Arizona History Convention. She's on the board, and the History Convention has been around for a long time, I think over 60 years. They're going to be virtual starting this Thursday for the first time ever, virtual. And I mentioned Dr. Osler about New Mexico. I was reading in New Mexico Magazine yesterday about there is a motel in Morarity, just outside of Albuquerque, that is one of the original Route 66 motels, and they're still doing very well. It's still in the same family. And what they were pointing out in the article is that Route 66 has become a real big deal to the younger generation, who especially are into kind of the 50s revival and the 50s furniture. But so a new generation, Heidi, is rediscovering Route 66.
Yes, and another surprising thing is a lot of people from Europe and Japan and China and you name it, they come to this country and they want to go to Route 66, and they're caught up with that, or that piece of mid-century American history as well. So go figure.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the history with the, how did the Arizona History Convention begin? And I think it is, isn't it over 60 years old?
I think this is the 66th year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's part of the Arizona Historical Society, which goes back to the very founding of the territory, and part of, you know, it was originally called the Pioneer Society, and you had to have a historical society, and it's just been an outgrowth over the years. It goes from town to town, you know, one year it'll be in Tucson, one year in Flagstaff, Prescott, Phoenix, Yuma. And next year, in 2022, we're going to have, every 4 or 5 years, we have a joint conference with New Mexico. So next year it'll be in Las Cruces.
Oh, yes. Very good. And on the way to Las Cruces, people can stop and visit our great sponsor, Silver City, and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's talk about some of the depth and the range of There's quite a few speakers, I think over 50 from all over Arizona and all over the country that we'll be discussing. Let's talk about that wide range of subjects.
And again, because we have a virtual convention this year, we can bring in scholars from all over the country. And what surprised me was so much research in Arizona history is going on around the country, you know, whether it's at UCLA or Syracuse University in Georgia, people are linking in. And so on top of scholars, we also have a lot of practicing historians, geographers, and archaeologists that are going to be getting together and talking about their work, you know, what it means to be a historian outside the classroom. A working professional that works for maybe a government agency or a private consulting firm, a museum, historical society. So all the different options there. So there is quite a variety of topics, and just about anything for anybody's tastes is on our program this year.
And there's a very interesting session about pandemics, not only the current pandemic, but panelists from the University of Arizona be discussing what they've learned from studying the Arizona newspapers that covered the famous 1918-1919 influenza pandemic.
Yes, and Catherine Morrissey of the University of Arizona History Department, she and other scholars and students in her department are working on this project that was funded by an Andrew Mellon Foundation grant. And they're looking at newspapers from southern Arizona during the time period to see how they covered this event. And I'm intrigued because I haven't seen this yet. I haven't heard about it, but I know from just my, you know, superficial knowledge of the original influenza pandemic after World War I was often it was suppressed in the news. So I'm curious to see how it was handled here in Arizona.
Yeah, I think the death toll, from what I've learned about this, was suppressed, and it was a lot higher than originally reported. Also, I want to talk about your panel. You're going to be discussing Arizona's first female sports columnist. Her name was Sally Jacobs. Tell us about that.
Yes, she was sort of a surprise to me. I wrote a book on women in Arizona politics years ago, and I had seen her name, Sally Jacobs. She was a press secretary for the Arizona suffrage movement. Mm. And Tom Dublin, who has run this great online project called Online Biographical Dictionary of Suffrage Women, asked me to write a bio of her. It's a national project where they're highlighting unknown women that were part of the women's rights movement in early 1900s. And Sally was just the name. That's it. That's all I knew about her. And I started to dig around, and I realized she went to work for the Arizona Republican, which is today the Arizona Republic newspaper, in 1912, right, when women won the right to vote. And she was a society editor. She grew up in a very prominent Jewish family, born in Phoenix in 1882. She was a real kind of historic person. And she knew she was asked to cover sports. She knew nothing about baseball, boxing, college football, or at least she pretended to. I'm not quite sure. She was like a vaudeville comedian. She was quite a hoot. She would just say, oh, I think the little pillows on the ground are places where the baseball players should sit down and rest after running. Things
We're quickly running out of time. When is that session going to be?
That's Thursday night at 6 o'clock. But like I said, you can, if you're registered and you have to register by Thursday, then you can watch it whenever you want.
And again, let's go over quickly the registration details for the Arizona History Convention.
Okay, just go to arizonahistory.org and check out the lineup. You can register right there and have directions on how to jump in and out of sessions. And if you really want some more in-depth coverage of these sessions, there is a lot of information on the Arizona History Convention Facebook page.
All right. Heidi Osselier, always a pleasure. Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you, Bill. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. A verdict is in on the Chauvin trial. We're being told it'll be announced here within minutes, so that'll be the very latest. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Have a great afternoon, everybody.